Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, what's going on?
What's good, people?
It's the one and only Dope Knife.
I am one of several million lingua franca.
There's not that many.
Check it, though. If you're like one in a million, that means there's thousands of people just like you in the world. So I'm one of many lingua francas. And we didn't even get into like the multiverse.
But there is only one Waiting on Reparations podcast.
That is true. So. In the entire multiverse, there's only one Waiting on Reparations podcast.
Happy first day of Black History Month.
Yeah, we're recording this on the first day of Black History Month. How do you celebrate the month of Black History?
You know, I try to stay a little, just get a little extra black for the month. You know what I'm saying? It's like you got to be black, you know, for the other 11 months. And it's like you just this one month you add in like an extra coat and walk around.
Yeah.
You know, just super proud. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. What I always find such a relief about Black History Month is that there's so little black history that it'll just squeeze into 28 days. Just cover the whole thing.
The whole entire speed
run. Oh, yeah. Speed run. There's like so little to cover.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need the long extended series. We can get it all done in this one.
Yeah,
this one month.
The full cinematic universe. Speaking of multiverses. Oh,
you want to speaking of whack stuff happening on Black History Month, so the day before Black History Month, and even I think some of this shit was today, but over a dozen, or just about a dozen, historically black colleges got bomb threats to kick the month off. Yeah, my former alma mater, Howard University, Alcorn State University, Coppin State, Edward Waters University, Fort Valley State, the University of the District of Columbia, Morgan State, Kentucky State, Xavier University, and more. Yeah, like they all got bomb threats. They had to cancel classes or close altogether. What do you think something like that means? I mean, apparently, throughout the past few months, these colleges have been getting threats leading up. But with it kind of happening, seemingly, I obviously it's not a coincidence. But what do you think about that? How does that make you feel?
Okay, I'm zooming way out. I'm zooming way, way out into thinking about how do we transition white people into the coming multiracial democracy. That is inevitable. I mean, maybe the democracy part, I don't know, do we live in a democracy now? Unclear, but a multiracial society, it's coming. They're going to be the minority. And this is going to be an unpopular take, but if we're getting into the Black History Month, let's think about it at the end of his life, Martin Luther King Jr., the only black person to ever have a mass movement that achieved things. By the way, the only one. Don't let them, Huey Newton, fictional. I don't want to parse hairs or anything like that, but do we mean in terms of getting a movement, I'm just playing on the whole, there's not a whole lot of black history thing. All these other cats didn't exist in the textbooks, didn't exist in real life for all I know.
Yeah.
You know, they're just the fodder of like HBO Max features Judas and the Black Messiah. But anyway, so towards the end of his life, MLK started to recognize that they needed a multiracial working class movement of people all fighting for economic freedom together in order to take on the government. And that's effectively why he got assassinated, right? And so, to answer the question, so taking like a couple of leaps forward of like, all right, bomb threats against universities because white people are feeling insecure about their increasingly marginal status in our society. How do we get people less freaked out? And we talked about this on the show before about like, you know, working class or blue collar white people, like, are they racist? I don't know. I can't remember what we were talking about. But like, I think one way to diffuse these tensions is to come up with like universalist, like, you know, policies that if you are, you know, a white like Wendy's worker or a black Wendy's worker, all y'all can agree, like, yeah, we down with free college. That's what's up. I'm good with it. Because, like, there's this fear that, like, black people are taking things away from everyone else. Oh, affirmative action. Oh, they're putting the interracials in the OKCupid ads and, like, shit. People, like, let's give everybody at the bottom some shit so we can stop fighting amongst ourselves. And maybe white people will stop giving bomb threats to black schools. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree. Although I don't know. I mean, I feel
also,
like...
Also, this is overly optimistic. I think some, like, fascist recalcitrants, there's really just nothing you can do. De-radicalization is just not my field. Go get it, boo-boo, if that's what you do. But yeah, no, I don't know.
I mean, it definitely, you know, it rings of all that stuff that we were talking about with Christopher Goldsmith the other day. Like, it rings of some fucking social media hoaxy type of, you know, like, we're gonna send them a bomb threat at the beginning of Black History Month, man. You know what I mean? It seems like super incel-y and shit like that. And I don't know. I hope that, you know, worst case or best case scenario, I guess at this point, is like, I hope that it's just threats. And it's just,
I do,
you know,
too. I
people it, doing stuff for
yeah. I hope it's just threats. I am also in this conversation reckoning with how deadened I have become to like threats of all kinds. Like, people talk mad shit. They gonna do shit. When it's like, nah, man. Sometimes like shit goes really bad, and like you should take it really seriously. But like, I mean, my reaction is I'm just like so dead inside from like being threatened a great deal.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I just can't feel anything about it.
I don't know what the statistics are or anything like that, but I'm imagining that for the most part, when people call in a threat or when people like send a threatening letter or something like that, that those ones on average don't result in anything. It's kind of the ones that you have to worry about just going out and doing the shit. It's more of the worry. That's why I'm saying this one made me think that it was more like of a, you know, social media, something to do to see the headlines and Twitter and everybody retweeting the story, that sort of shit. But, you know, on some more positive notes, I started, because I've been, you know, I've been working on the same graphic novel for the last few years I've been talking about on the show. It's still being colored, by the way. It's almost done. But I started writing again, and I was brainstorming some ideas for a new comic and shit. And I came up with an idea to do something that's kind of like a Lord of the Ringsy, Conan the Barbarian-ish sort of thing, but set in like ancient Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like a Middle Earth, but with the basis of it being like pre-colonial or even like BC Africa, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'm with it. So what is your process or something like this? You said you worked on the last one for like 3 years, so like,
yeah.
When does this shit drop? I'm trying to, like, I want to read it. I want to read it now. Where is
okay,
it?
Okay, so also for the for the last one that I was working on, so the process for that, I mean, I wrote the story, like a little treatment of what the story is. Then storyboarded out all the pages, then drew all the shit, And then after drawing it, you know what I mean? It's like visualizing, knowing what the story is, visualizing it and drawing it. And then afterwards going out and writing the dialogue and filling in the bubbles based off of the shit that I already drew. So it's like I don't really draw it with the dialogue per se in mind and shit. But for something like this, the new one that I'm working on, it's going to move pretty fast because I'm not going into it thinking
faster.
About making some long-ass epic thing.
I want it yesterday.
Thing,
I know? Need it now. Where
but
is
it's,
it?
It's cool. It's coming. It's coming. Right now, I'm in the light research phase because I kind of thought at first I was going to do like a crime story about Liberia. And then in the middle doing the research for that, I was like, oh, man, I'm going to put that on the back burner. And I want to do something a bit more out of my element because I usually write crime stories and stuff like that. So it's like I want to do something that's, you know, that then, you know, dragons and
I want the dragons. Where are the dragons?
African witch doctors.
I want African dragons.
And, you know what I mean? A Shaka Zulu-esque figure instead of, I don't know what the nigga from Lord of the Rings name is, but one of them sword-swinging niggas.
Sword-swinging?
Yeah, no. Who was the young sword-swinging guy?
Not the dwarf.
Not Orlando Bloom. The other nigga. Vigo. What was Vigo's character?
Amigo? Vigo Mortensen. I don't know. I can picture his ass. I just call him
I don't
Mortensen.
Know what his character's name was. Y'all motherfuckers know what I mean. Anyway.
what so are we
doing?
Dope.
What are we doing today?
So today we're speaking with Walter English, a.k.a. former love poet. We're going to get a more thorough introduction for him here in a second, but really, really live to talk about his Brister English project, studying the genealogies of African descendants of slaves and connecting people with their history. So you want to go ahead and get on into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. My man's is popping on TikTok right now. This is our first time talking with somebody who's doing stuff on TikTok. I think I kind of want to make it a personal mission to like break in all the skeptical, the few, if there are any left out there, the skeptical adults who haven't really gotten on TikTok and utilized the different spaces and communities that are on there. So
I mean, I think partially it comes into like just digital literacy, like. Because it's not something we're really taught in school other than this is how you type. Like, this is how you make a PowerPoint presentation. Like, look, nigga, I fucking got locked out of my Facebook account for, like, 4 months. I got locked out on that shit, and I literally don't know how to do a goddamn thing. I'm like, well, how do I check my messages? Like, I don't understand. I get on TikTok, and, like, I had that new single come out next week. And they were like, go on TikTok and make a viral TikTok dance from the music video. And so I got on there. I got all excited. Like, oh, I got my old dance. Like, yeah, let's go. And, like, I don't know. I got, like, 4 likes. I was like, how does this work? What am I supposed to do?
You got to keep at it. You got to keep at it.
I just don't have that persistence. I don't have that time. So.
Well, you're busy as fuck, yo.
Busy as hell, like... bro. Yeah. Oh, speaking of the good news, I got another crazy announcement for listeners / you, Mac. I didn't tell you this yet. So I had a show last Saturday, and one of my professors in my department came. So I don't really talk about it on the show a whole lot, but, you know, I'm getting my PhD and shit. And so this lady, she's a very nice lady, came up to me after the show and was like, yo, that was your dissertation. And I was like, what are you talking about? She was like, you should just submit that and graduate. I was like, excuse me, what? And then I emailed her this week and she was like, yeah, people do like arts-based dissertations all the time. There's been one other rap one, but like, just write a 30-page intro paper about like why this counts as like hip-hop education research and then like graduate. So my bitch ass is gonna be graduating with a doctorate in like April. What's good?
That is what's up.
I can't wait to be done. Right. I fucking hate my life. Anyway, so let's get into.
All right, so we'll be back with former love poet right after the jump.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right.
Yeah, so today I am very honored that we are joined by Walter English, the former love poet, rapper, poet, activist, and founder of the Brister English Project, which seeks to help descendants of enslaved people find their history at no charge to them. Very popular on TikTok, spreading, you know, messages, anti-racism. And so we are very, very excited to have you here today.
Just for everybody out there who doesn't know, because I've been, you know, checking out your TikTok page and seeing the different things that you cover and the different things that you talk about. Mariah's been doing the same. And through that is how we've, you know, come across the Brister English Project. So if you could you explain to our listeners in your own words exactly what is the Brister English Project?
The Brister English Project, like to begin with, it's named after my second great grandfather. I saw his name when he went by just Bristow on a slave ship manifest at 14 years old. To see that and to see what he went through and what he became, and just the history, the amount of history that comes with this, it's hard to explain. I always tell people it's really hard to explain. It's an amazing feeling. It's a different feeling. I want to give people that feeling. I don't believe Black Americans should have to pay to get their genealogy done. And so with the Brister English Project, people sign up on the list. I'm in phase two right now with the project, so I have volunteers helping me. I'm talking about people who have years of experience in doing this for helping me for free. Everything runs off donations, so I make sure I have stuff paid for people to make sure they're able to work. As well as I got runners who will go to grave sites for me. He'll go to historical sites to take pictures or whatever. It's just one big project to help American descendants of chattel slavery connect with a past that is, like I tell people, is more than just dreams and chants.
So where did this project come from? We spoke some about, you know, I think you said your great-great-grandfather. And so clearly you know a little bit about your history, but what was your process for actually launching this project? And as well, like, how it works, some of the internal processes that help bring this history to folks.
So it started, like I said, after I was doing, I made a free database. That's what I started with. I started with a free database of resources to help people. People still wanted, you know, how do I do this? They had more questions. So I said, why not I do it? It's supposed to start off small. It's supposed to be, you know, I launched it on Christmas. I was planning it a month prior. I got the historian who helped me find out all this information. She jumped on the project with me. And then I got the funding on Christmas Eve. Christmas Day, I launched everything. And that's really it. And as far as the internal working go, what I do is people fill out a form. Your name, your grandparents' name, if you know any kind of info to help us out. We go right on Ancestry. We start putting in information. We use sources like Genealogy Bank, Newspaper Archives, newspaper.com, anywhere information may be found, Lost Friends. when do we start your tree? A lot of people like to focus going straight back, which is always good. You want to know who your great, 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 great mm-hmm. grandparents are. But for us Black Americans, we run into a wall, you know, because at one point we become property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I like to do is not only focus back, but focus on what I call the branches. So you get to see your cousins.
Sort of
you get to see
your aunts and uncles. Yeah, that's cool.
No, everybody. And like working on this project, I'm starting to see people that's related.
Yeah.
They don't know that they're related.
Yeah.
So just like it's a good feeling. And then I do like a few videos. If I always ask permission, hey, we'd like for me to talk about this on my TikTok. I'm running across amazing history. And me being able to share that with people, not only the people who are directly affects, but all of us, to see find one of the 1,200 Black lawyers in 1930
mm-hmm.
that's related to somebody on TikTok.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's stuff like.
So what are some of the crazy stories you've uncovered, you know, from history or, you know, impressive insights that you have drawn from doing some of that genealogical work?
Personally, just in my family alone, craziest thing that I've seen, I think it's about in 1940 or 1930, my aunt, one of my grand aunts, she had a husband. And when you're looking at everything that like the records and where they lived at and who they were with, it looked like he was cheating on her. Mm-hmm. So she divorced him. So a woman divorcing a man in 1930, you could be deemed as crazy. Literally, they would put you in an insane asylum. And so he sent my aunt to an insane asylum after she divorced him.
Bro, what?
And not only an insane asylum, yes, not only an insane asylum, but Longview. Or Lakeview, Lakeview, I believe it is, in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's one of the most infamous places.
Yeah, it's like a Shutter Island type of joint.
It is awful. And she had to spend, she ended up spending at least 7 years in there before she passed away.
What? No, that's crazy.
And towards the end of it, towards the end of her, during that asylum, it progressively got worse because it couldn't hold as many people. But they took in that many people.
Yeah.
So people didn't get fed. They lived over sewage. It was just a bad environment. But then you also, when I'm looking, because I look through the documents, I'm not just saying, oh, that name matched with that. I want to see through what happened. And everybody in her family, or in that side of the family, died young who was involved with him. So her brother who worked for him, he died in his 20s. The sister that he was cheating with died in her 20s, her late
20s. With her sister? Man.
Sister, and then he married her co-worker, according to the city director.
And then she died in an insane asylum. Man.
Yo.
Niggas don't ever change. They still see shit like that to a lesser degree, but, you know, similar mindset in 2022.
Oh, yeah. Still, that's that mindset is still going on.
I mean, that sounds like a plot for a movie, man. Like, that's that shit is wild.
It's wild to me, the level of detail that you can get into. Not just like, oh, you're, you know, oh, you, like your great great grandfather was a famous carpenter in like the city of what's it, but like down to the level of this person was cheating with this person. It's like that's amazing. That's amazing what you can discover through these databases.
Right.
So how many of them have you done so far?
Close to 20 so far.
Okay.
Personally,
do you find it gets easier with each one, or like you get more of a like an efficiency in your being able to research and stuff with each one that you do?
The efficiency, yes. Once the list jumped from 74. Well, it jumped from 14 people to 74 overnight, and then 74 to 1,200.
Oh shit!
So once it hit 1,200, I need some help, and so I've been doing like a slow process. I brought in some volunteers, see how they can work, how we can work together. Mm-hmm. So with like the volunteers, like personally, I did about 20 with the volunteers I've been trying out for the past month. We probably got close to 30 while I've been doing the background, mm-hmm. getting stuff in order, stuff. They still been working, and I find it gets easier because I know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And with Black history, you got to look out for certain things when you're looking in through our ancestry. You got to look out for different name spellings.
Mm.
You have to keep in mind who lived with who at what time. Going from mixed to Black to mixed to Black on different senses, but you know that's still that's your people. So it's that part got easier. You know, I've been doing it for so long now. Like seeing stuff like that, it's easier to know what I'm looking for, what to look out for. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Have you encountered any limitations thus far? I'm sure, like, given the thoroughness of record keeping, particularly when you go back to, like, slavery times, and then certain laws around, like, anti-miscegenation, where people weren't, you know, showing up on birth certificates, et cetera, mislisting race. I've, you know, been studying my own, like, indigenous ancestry, and they listed all the natives as black. There was only white or black on, like, the census form. So do you run into issues like that in trying to trace people's lineage?
Yeah. I mean, you come across that where, like, you get things that's a maybe. Like, I'm not too sure about that. You know, so I like to ask people, I like to ask people questions when we get to some of those points. And a lot of people I find out don't talk to, like, their grandparents about their past and their history and stuff like that. Because I asked one person a question. I showed one person, like, hey, this is your, I believe this is your grandfather. I'm not too sure. But this is a marriage certificate. I believe this is your grandmother on there, but they spelled her name with a K instead of a C.
Yeah.
Can you show her to it? And she starts to learn about all different kind of family members that she had all over the, like, so, like, it's, yeah.
So with the, you're saying that, the number of requests for it, so it jumped up to 1200, you said?
You're at around 1,200 and currently sitting at 2,000.
Okay, so if you've got like 2,000 of them sitting in the chamber right now, just knowing like the sort of space that TikTok is, do you find yourself like running into the issue of perhaps like white people not understanding exactly what it's about and perhaps wanting you to do the research for them?
Oh my God, look at mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I got tagged in a video today.
Oh, word.
Like somebody, like people are tagging. Somebody tagged me in somebody, like a white woman's comment. She looked for an answer. It's like, oh, he has a project that can help. I said, it's not for her. It's not for her. But I ran into the issue of people get, they let the, you know, fragility take over.
Yeah. Do you find there's like broader pushback that, you know, there's some people who get mistaken with like, this project ain't for y'all. Are there any, is there people out there that were like mad about it? Because people on the internet get mad about anything.
Oh yeah, no, there's a ton of people that were mad. One woman made 3 videos about me, and like, she made 3 videos about me, and she was like, "Look, I tracked my family back to 1830, and this says they were mixed. His name was Charlie," and I'm like, "So you did the work?
You congrats.
Like, it's like you want me to find like I don't know if she thought I was like a magical Negro and can just connect with all black people, but I couldn't. So I'm like, Miss, I can't do that.
Doing seances to bring their great-great-granddad back out the Ouija board."
Plus, your thing is like specifically for descendants of slaves too. It's like I don't understand how you.
That's what I'm saying.
Just jump into that.
People. Oh, hey, I'm Irish. That's what I keep getting. I'm Irish. We were slaves. You're indentured servitude. Plus, you know that you're Irish. I'm black. Like
exactly.
That's the difference. I'm trying to let people know, like, I'm like, you never been the butt of a slave joke.
Yeah.
You never been in that situation to understand, like, okay, I really can't. I don't know what my family did. I don't know who my people were.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what part of Africa they were from.
And
like,
that kind of level of detail is probably lost to history. I mean, would you say that's, like, lost to history?
Yeah.
Almost altogether? Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. But one thing I'll say that with American descendants of enslaved people, is that we created this culture that's from the South to the East Coast, West Coast. We have a culture in being black that we still made here. Mm-hmm. Like, and with that culture, you can see it throughout history, like from occupations to places they lived, to the things they did, to what they sold, to the land that was big. Like when I come across agricultural records and I see land that they own, I see exactly what they grew and how they ran stuff. It's our own history. Like I can't go back as far as, like, you know, I know you're from Nigeria and I can find this, but I could show you the not so bad parts of history that is still black culture.
What do you find people take away from, for the folks that you, for whom you've already completed like their genealogy, like what do they take from it? Like what does that lend to their lives, like knowing what their roots are?
I've had people, everybody cries. Yeah. I don't know why, but everybody cries. That's one big thing. And like, I'm like, that's the feeling that's hard to explain. But everybody, I got told I changed people's lives. I got told like I've changed people's lives by doing this. Who told me? Somebody wants to help out the project I did. Like I helped them out. They want to actually join on now to help people. Because again, they see how that feels and how the experience is. Some people said I plugged in missing pieces of their life. Sakitha, who's on TikTok, a bigger creator. We stumbled across her dad by accident.
Wow.
I had my historian. She never knew her father. Wow. And as soon as we saw the picture of his high school photo, I'm like, wow, that's her face. That's her exact face. And so I had to email her. I said, hey, I got a picture of your dad. I don't know if you want to see it, but she said, sure. And sure enough. And so like that, she said that she felt like an alien in her family. She didn't look like anybody.
Yeah.
But now she felt like she belonged somewhere. Yeah. So it's like that's kind of feeling.
So this might be kind of a technical question, but what is it about TikTok that makes it the right platform to do this?
Oh, man. A lot of eyes. A lot of eyes. Things can go like that in a heartbeat. Like, I was talking about the Bristol English Project since the 17th, I think, where I kind of announced it to people, launched it a week later. And I wasn't really getting, I had 7 people. I respond to a racist white person on there with me talking about it. And then boom, 1200 people like that. Just TikTok is a great platform right now. It's the, I believe, number one at the moment, if you want to grab somebody's attention.
Yeah. I mean, I was asking just because, I mean, you'd be shocked at how many people my age, even now, are still under the impression when I talk to them about TikTok having interesting things. They're like, oh man, it's all dances and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, we're still at the stage of getting people over that stigma of TikTok.
Right. That is just people, just kids up there dancing. Yeah. I'm like, nah, bro, I'm telling you. There's like, it's different size of TikTok.
Like, it's literally a corner of TikTok for like any interest that you have, really.
Any interest.
You mentioned like people often have really strong emotional reactions to hearing about their genealogy, and sometimes they cry. And this actually made me think of, I'm not sure, I feel like you of all people would probably know about this, but when they did George Floyd's genealogy and finding like all the ways that the system in various you know, ways like screwed over his family over and over again. To sort of create a picture, you know, people on the right, you know, white supremacists want to say, oh, he was a drug addict, oh, he, you know, beat his wife or whatever. But if you go back in his genealogy, I believe it was his great-great-grandfather, when he got his freedom, he accumulated 500 acres of land that then were just stolen, just straight up stolen by white settlers. And then later on, I think it was his grandmother, she was like very, you know, she was... very accomplished academic in high school, wanted to become a lawyer. They wouldn't let her go to law school. She taught herself how to read and write and stuff and ended up being like a really, you know, really good at school. Couldn't go to law school because they just said, we don't accept y'all. And so thing after thing after thing, which kind of like helps us understand and give context to how somebody like George Floyd ended up in the situation he ended up in. Like, yeah, he might have been on drugs, might have had, you know, priors, etc. But like it contextualizes it in a way like you understand how someone could become that way. So do you ever find people who get emotional about their results in having to face the kinds of struggles that our people have always gone through?
I don't think I've ran into that just yet, where people like are really upset or get kind of emotional to be like, that's what I kind of faced. I take that back. It's normally folks who I can find slave census for.
Yeah.
If I can find a slave census and I can show you that, I showed somebody, I was like, I think they were looking for a 55-year-old black woman, because they didn't have names on there. So I'm looking for a 55-year-old black woman, and I find the census with the same location, area. And it's kind of like the same reaction I had that they had, where it's like, you got to be just kind of quiet. You just got to think to yourself, like.
Yeah.
It makes history tangible.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's what they did. But I think a lot of people who are taking part of this are proud, come with pride of that, hey, their ancestors went through this to go through that, and now they're here.
True. Like, histories of struggle are also histories of triumph, in a sense. Like, even if all that our people have had to live through can kind of just be really heavy on the heart to, like, just think about that sorrow and that pain. But also, we survived, you know, they survived enough to have their own kids, who then had their own kids, and here we are today. So in another way, yeah, it totally makes sense that that could be inspiring, even if, like, if, you know, the story you told about, what was that, your great-great-grandmother, or, you know, getting in the Santa Claus, that's heavy. That's heavy, man, you know? But also, like, being able to actually know your, yeah, like, just have, I guess, I can imagine, like, really understanding your history after sort of being told all when we were growing up that it's lost to history, even though it's not. It's not, really. You can find it if you look for it. Can be really empowering.
So speaking of history, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like, who are you?
Yeah, so you're an activist, you're a poet, you're a rapper. So, like, yeah, so...
Oh, I didn't even know you spit.
Now a genealogist. And so how did you get... Yeah, so talk to us a little bit about your arts background.
I've been writing forever. I used to story write. I think when I was in the third grade, I started writing poetry. I'm a 90s baby. I used to watch Def Poetry Jam with Mos Def and stuff. So I got into spoken word. My family's big into music. And so I was like, you know, I can write some songs and whatever. By the time I turned 18, I was going to college. 19, I booked my first, like, big show here in my city at a club I was underage for, but they still let me perform. That led to just a lot more opportunities. I end up performing at Castel Breach. It's one of the biggest wineries here in New York. I was ghostwriting for a little while. Wrote for Doritos, MTV, Nickelodeon, over 50 other companies.
That's what's up.
And then 2019, like, I've always been a poet, but I always kept my poetry to myself. Because when I'm in my music, I'm like, I can go out here. I got the music going. Poetry, everybody's eyes on you, is quiet.
That's so funny. Yeah, because I had the opposite experience. I was like a poet in high school. I did slam poetry in like college, but I wrote rhymes, but like I didn't tell nobody because like that was a whole, it was like a kind of taboo in a way of like, oh, hip hop, like, oh, you gangbang, like what? And then later, like stepping out, like, man, I'm not going to just sit here and not, like, I got sick bars. I don't know what I'm doing sitting on all these.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how it differs from person to person.
I was telling everybody in the world that I rap. I was like, yo, look at that. I was walking around with my notebook and shit, like, yo, look at how many words.
My vocabulary is intense. Yeah.
Yeah, I was prideful about my rap. Like, I knew I can piece together a story.
So
yeah,
who are some of your influences?
Writing scheme, the people hear how I write sometimes. Rakim.
Okay, word.
For me. Just his.
Gotta be.
The way I think, I break things down to a science almost. And I was just like, wow, I like how he rhymed in the middle, beginning, and end, and how he flipped that. And then just for writing preferences, Royce the 5'9" was big with my writing. Wayne, when it came to similes,
he's crazy with it. To this day, I'm just like, man.
Yeah, and then Nas, and then when I got older, Jay-Z. I didn't like Jay-Z when I was younger.
Yeah,
when I got older, I could appreciate it. I could appreciate the bars and everything.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So does.
And then my biggest, and people don't chew me up for this, is going to be Kanye.
I understand, man. We've talked about him on the show all the time.
Musically, it's so good.
Yeah.
I had 15 surgeries coming up.
Yeah.
And so when I heard Through the Wire for the first time as a kid, that resonated, and I was like, if he could rap, I could rap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so I'm like, Kanye gave me that big thing. And I saw him on Def Poetry Jam. I'm like, oh, he's writing poetry too. Mm-hmm. I can write poetry as well. You know, so that was kind of, like, I'm here because of Ye.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you think at all there's a relationship between like the hip hop aspect of your identity and some of the work that you're doing with the Brister English Project?
Yeah. I believe so. I think, the creativity is getting this message across so it's digestible for people. I can get up here and talk about all the boring facts and everything like that, but if I make it exciting, I talk in poems sometimes in my videos. That gets people attention. If I get a they want to hear what I'm gonna say next.
Yeah.
And so just how I my hip hop persona, I can come up here with all the confidence in the world because I feel like I'm the best at what I do right now. Can't tell me otherwise, and I'm gonna say what I gotta say.
So you think it's like it helps out like with the Because I'm an advocate of like using hip hop as like a form of communication to like it makes people learn things and retain information better. You know, as far as I go. So do you think like that aspect of hip hop that, you know, helps all of us MCs be communicators? You think that's like the biggest way it helps out?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. Because we got to get our message across. That's the big thing. We have to get our message across in a short amount of time.
That's
same thing I learned with, like, slam poetry. Like, you got 3 minutes. Go talk your talk, and you got to make this connection with somebody. And so I think when people hear like rappers talk in certain situations and stuff, people who are like, they got this preconceived notion of like we're dumb or something like that. But I'm like, can you write a 3 minute song that makes sense and this like that, so I can talk. And talk to people like it's nothing. Right. That's why a lot of us be able to do that. It's like, oh, they so charismatic. We gotta be.
So maybe it's answered because of like how important the Brister English Project is to you. But is there a particular like political issue or social issue that you would say just on a personal level is like at the top of your priority in terms of things that you're usually thinking about or talking about?
Top of my list, reason I joined the NAACP is to get closer to help black women. They died at 4 times higher rate during maternity, and even higher in my city. So yep. We got Rochester General out here to change, to get more black midwives and to get more black nurses involved, black doctors, black OBGYNs. To help black women.
Absolutely.
They should be dying at a 4 times higher rate than any other race.
Down here in Georgia, black women have a higher maternal mortality rate than Iraq. And yeah, a lot of other, like, developing, quote unquote, developing countries. So yeah, black maternal mortality is a huge issue. Huge issue. So I'm heartened to hear you're working on that.
What are some of the reasons that they give for it?
Oh, they don't.
Or do they not even bother?
It don't even bother, but when you look at history, you look at the father of gynecology. Look at J. Marion Sims, right? J. Marion Sims, I forgot the enslaved woman's name, but he used to operate on enslaved people, normally women. He was the one that used to take the trigger warning for folks, used to take the tool to open up shoes.
Yeah.
And crack baby skulls, that guy.
Yeah,
crack black baby skulls because the Negro brain.
Yeah,
so like what he used to do was when he operated on the black women awake, that's why we have the bias now in the medical field that black people don't feel pain.
Right.
It's like other races. I used to operate them on them awake, dirty table, utensils, whatever. And if they survived it, they normally develop a kidney infection or urinary tract, something, because it was filthy. He told them it's because it's their fault. They didn't take care of themselves.
Yeah.
So it's black women not taking care of themselves. That's the issue. And not these doctors mishandling people. You know, so.
So they try, they do the culture and genetics thing for like that too?
That's yes. They did a study with nurses, nurses going to school a few years back. And they did a poll on, do black people feel, you know, less pain or more pain? And they thought that a lot of them thought that black people felt less pain
among current medical students, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Current medical students.
Yeah.
And with that, like, it's close to me because that hit home. Like, I woke up in the middle of a surgery, my 11th surgery. I woke up in the middle of my 11th surgery, and the nurse looked at the doctor, clear as day. I'm up, clear as day. I'm trying to catch breath. Nurse looked at the doctor and said, you can finish while he awake.
Bruh, yo. What?
She looked at the doctor and said, you can finish while he's awake.
Oh my God. That's insane. And then on the subject of maternal mortality, I think, I mean, and this is just understanding a lot of issues through like sort of an intersectional lens. If you look at the disproportionate numbers of black women living in poverty, that might then cost somebody, they're not making their prenatal, you know, gynecology appointments to check up on how things are going. So they might not know they have gestational diabetes. They might not know they have hypertension or something like that. And then, and additionally, you know, if you're in working poverty, if you're working 40, 50 hours a week while you're pregnant, you know, up until you deliver, pretty much, and then, you know, you got to be back at work a week later, because otherwise you get fired anyway. the kinds of pressures folks are under because we disproportionate rates of poverty, and you know, environmental racism, toxic stress from racism, etc. That I imagine play into that as much as, you know, medical racism, and things like that. It's wild, but I'm really glad that you look at your, you know, it's, I think it's an understudied, under advocated for area. And so, especially as someone that isn't directly impacted, though you have experienced medical racism yourself, it's great that, you know, you're using your voice to help elevate an issue that, you know, doesn't directly impact you, but is incredibly important.
So where can people find you, if they want to check out, and what can they do if they want to help you with everything that you're doing?
So if you want to reach me out, reach out to my social media. I'm a former love poet everywhere, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. If you want to help out with the Bristol English Project, monetary donations help a ton. I make monthly payments on stuff, and I provide everything for everybody who's helping. Monetary donations, if you go to bristerep.me, there's two donate links as well as all the information about the project.
Word up.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here. One of these days, once your list thins out a little bit, once you make a dent in it, I might have to put my name down there to find a little bit out about the Parker family tree.
Come rock with me.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you for stopping and talking to us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeartRadio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken, Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two, Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. That was former love poet.
Bruh,
dropping.
It's so cool to see people just like be passionate about something and just like offer that their passion to the world. Like, oh, I found out a lot about like my own history. So now I'm just going to offer everyone the opportunity to learn about their history.
To
like,
do it on their own. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and
so
who
cool.
knows? I mean, the whole time that we were talking to him, I have this feeling in the back of my head that
that's just gonna blow the hell up even more than it already
is. You already said he had like 2,000 people on the waiting list.
Yeah, but I think I'm talking more. I'm talking more. I think he's gonna be really busy in the coming months.
I think he's gonna need to expand the team. But yeah, if you're interested in his work, I would not recommend getting on the waiting list right now because the man is busy as hell. But if you do have genealogical, you know, archival research skills, hit a motherfucker up. Help out. Connect people with their history. It's like a beautiful service to provide.
If you can't contribute in that form, hey, a couple dollars helps, yo. So throw them something, help them fund that thing and keep it going.
Yeah.
But speaking of keeping it going, we got to end this shit and get the raps going. You feel like rapping?
Yes. I will.
Well, you're going to rap.
I am going to rap, goddammit. All right, let's hit it. Joel, drop a beat.
You're promoting an album.
I know. I'm going to do rap music.
Yo, Joel, drop that. Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Life's coming too fast, we can't catch up. And we keeping it too cool, you can't stress us. If you want a nanny, go get you a Fran Dresser. Beat you so bad, you're feeling my ancestors. Think about it often, makes me crazy. Lost track of the fam, it was traced to slavery. You wanna just know it, he gonna just show it. That's my homeboy's project, former love poet. But the Nazis marching all up in Orlando. Candace Owens still acting like she a Sambo. Your favorite rapper still talking about a Lambo. I'm in a waiting line, trying to buy me some ammo. Dope knife, give me my reparations now. Superhero shit when I rock a cape and cow. A mic, then I gotta go and take a bow. Where's the sacred cow? Make him wave the towel. Do it with a smile. All right, I'm done.
I see y'all snarky liberals happily back at the family brunch hour. Probably would've grabbed me, dragged me off of a lunch counter back in Greensboro. Diversity quotas getting filled, but maintaining the status quo a horror. I know history is important, but when I check it out, it's a mystery. I'm looking back at my family tree for the missing links. I know who my mama's father was and who all the sisters be, but to dig deeper down into it, might check out that Brista thing.
Yeah, yeah. You are listening to Waiting on Reparations. I'm Dope Knife.
I'm Lingua Franca.
And we will see y'all next week.
Peace.
Listen to Waiting on Reparations on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.